almost. Reacher had heard the word. Not that it meant much to him. He had never seen an elf. The brunette said,
"The Ramones might be at CBGB. Or Blondie."
Reacher said,
"I'll go if you go."
"It's a rough area."
"Compared to what? Iwo Jima?"
"Where's that?"
"It's an island in the Pacific."
"Sounds nice. Does it have beaches?"
"Lots of them." "What's your name?"
"Chrissy."
"Pleased to meet you, Chrissy. My name is Reacher."
"First or last?"
"Only."
"You have only one name?"
"That anyone uses."
"So if I come to CBGB with you, do you promise to stick close by?"
Which was pretty much a do bears sleep in the woods type of a question, in Reacher's opinion. Is the Pope a Catholic? He said,
"Sure, count on it."
The blondes on the opposite side of the table started up, fidgeting with doubtful body language, and immediately Reacher knew they wouldn't come too, which was dead-on A-okay with him, like a big green light. A one-on-one excursion, like a real date. 9 o'clock in the evening, Wednesday, July 13th, New York City, and his first civilian conquest was almost upon him, like a runaway train. He could feel it coming, like an earthquake. He wondered where Chrissy's dorm was. Close by, he guessed. He sipped his Coke. Chrissy said,
"So, let's go, Reacher."
Reacher left money on the table for 4 Cokes, which he guessed was the gentlemanly thing to do. He followed Chrissy out through the door, and the night heat hit him like a hammer. Chrissy, too. She held her hair away from her shoulders with the backs of her hands, and he saw a damp sheen on her neck. She said,
"How far is it?"
He said,
"You've never been?"
"It's a bad area."
"I think we have to go east about 5 blocks, past Broadway and Lafayette, to the Bowery. Then about 3 blocks south, to the corner with Bleecker."
"Oh, it's so hot."
"That's for sure."
"Maybe we should take my car, for the AC.
"You have a car?"
"Sure."
"Here in the city?"
"Right there."
And she pointed to a small hatchback car on the curb, about 50 feet away. A Chevrolet Chevette, Reacher thought. Maybe a year old, maybe baby blue, although it was hard to tell under the yellow streetlights. He said,
"Doesn't it cost a lot to keep a car in the city?"
She said,
"Parking is free after 6 o'clock.
"But what do you do with it in the daytime?"
She paused a beat, as if unraveling the layers of his question, and she said,
"No, I don't live here."
"I thought you did. Sorry, my mistake. I figured you were at NYU.
She shook her head and said,
"Sarah Lawrence."
"Who's she?"
"It's a college. Where we go? In Yonkers, north of here. Sometimes we drive down and see what's going on. Sometimes there are NYU boys in that coffee shop."
"So we're both out-of-towners."
"Not tonight,"
Chrissy said.
"What are your friends going to do?"
"About what?"
"About getting home tonight."
"I'm going to drive them," Chrissy said, "like always."
Reacher said nothing.
"But they'll wait,"
Chrissy said.
"That's part of the deal."
The Chevette's air conditioner was about as lousy as the coffee shop's, but something was better than nothing. There were a few people on Broadway, like ghosts in a ghost town, moving slow, and a few on Lafayette, slower still, and the homeless people on the Bowery, waiting for the shelters to open. Chrissy parked 2 blocks north of the venue, on Great Jones Street, between a car with its front window broken and a car with its back window broken. But it was under a working streetlight, which looked to be about as good as it got, short of employing a team of armed guards or a pack of vicious dogs or both. And the car would have been no safer left on Washington Square anyway. So they got out into the heat and walked to the corner through air thick enough to eat. The sky was as hot and hard as an iron roof at noontime, and it was still flickering in the north, with a kind of restless energy that promised plenty and delivered nothing. There was no line at the door of the club, which Chrissy felt was a good thing because it meant there would be spots to be had at the front, near the stage, just in case it really was the Ramones or Blondie that night. A guy inside took their money, and they moved past him into the heat and the noise and the dark, towards the bar, which was a long, low space with dim light and sweating walls and red diner stools. There were about 30 people in there, 28 of them kids no older than Chrissy, plus one person Reacher already knew, and another person he was pretty sure he was going to get to know pretty well and pretty soon. The one he knew was Jill Hemingway, still thin and blonde and nervous, still in her short summer dress. The one he felt he would get to know looked a lot like Crisselli, a cousin maybe. He was the same kind of size and shape and age, and he was wearing the same kind of clothes, which were a sweated-through suit and a shirt plastered tight against a wet and hairy belly. Jill Hemingway saw Reacher first, but only by a second. She moved off her stool and took a step, and immediately the guy in the suit started snapping his fingers and gesturing for the phone. The barkeep dumped the instrument in front of him, and the guy started dialing. Hemingway pushed her way through the thin crowd in the main room and came up to Reacher face to face and said,
"You idiot!"
Reacher said, "Jill, this is my friend Chrissy. Chrissy, this is Jill, who I met earlier this evening. She's an FBI agent." Beside him, Chrissy said,
"Hi, Jill."
Hemingway looked temporarily nonplussed and said,
"Hi, Chrissy."
Reacher said, "Are you here for the music?" Hemingway said,
"I'm here because this is one of the few places Crisselli doesn't get total cooperation. Therefore, this is one of the few places I knew he would have to put a guy. So I'm here to make sure nothing happens to you."
"How did you know I would come here?"
"You live in South Korea. What else have you heard of?"
Chrissy said,
"What exactly are we talking about?"
Crisselli's guy was still on the phone. Reacher said,
"Let's sit down."
Hemingway said,
"Let's not. Let's get you the hell out of here."
Chrissy said,
"What the hell is going on?"
There were tiny cafe tables near the deserted stage. Reacher pushed through the crowd, left shoulder, right shoulder, and sat down, his back to a corner, most of the room in front of him. Chrissy sat down next to him, hesitant, and Hemingway paced for a second, and then she gave it up and joined them. Chrissy said,
"This is really freaking me out, guys. Will someone please tell me what's going on?"
Reacher said,
"I was walking down the street, and I saw a guy slap Agent Hemingway in the face.
And?
I hoped my presence would discourage him from doing it again. He took offense. Turns out, he's a mobster. Jill thinks they're measuring me for concrete shoes."
"And you don't?"
"Seems oversensitive to me."
Chrissy said,
"Reacher, there are whole movies about this stuff."
Hemingway said,
"She's right. You should listen to her. You don't know these people. You don't understand their culture. They won't let an outsider disrespect them. It's a matter of pride. It's how they do business. They won't rest until they fix it."
Reacher said,
"In other words, they're exactly the same as the Marine Corps. I know how to deal with people like that. I've been doing it all my life."
"How do you plan to deal with them?"
"By making the likely cost too high, which it already is, frankly. They can't do anything in here, because they'd be arrested, either by you or the NYPD, which is too high of a cost. It would mean lawyers and bribes and favors, which they won't spend on me. I'm not worth it. I'm nobody. Crisselli will get over it."
"You can't stay in here all night."
"He already tried it on the street, and he didn't get very far.
10 minutes from now, he'll have 6 guys out front.
Then I'll go out the back.
He'll have 6 guys there, too."
Chrissy said,
"You know when I asked you to stick close by to me?"
Reacher said,
"Sure."
"You can forget that part now, okay?"
Reacher said,
"This is nuts."
Hemingway said,
"You hit a made man in the head. What part of that don't you understand? That just doesn't happen. Get used to it, kid. And right now, you're in the same room as one of his goons, who just got off the phone."
"I'm sitting next to an FBI agent."
Hemingway said nothing in reply to that. Reacher thought, NYU, Sarah Lawrence. Hemingway had never confirmed it either way. He had asked her, how long have you been with the FBI? She had answered, who says I am? He said, are you or are you not? She said nothing. It's not real hard. It's a yes or no answer.
No, she said, it really isn't.
What does that mean?
It's yes and no, not yes or no.
Reacher paused a beat. What, you're freelancing here? He said. Is that it? This isn't really your case? Which is why there was no backup van? Which is why you were using your little sister's tape player?
It was my tape player. I'm suspended.
You're what?
Medical grounds. But that's what they always say. What it means is they took my badge, pending review.
Of what?
Like you said, the lawyers and the bribes and the favors. They're weighing me in the balance. Me against all the good stuff.
This was Criselli?
Hemingway nodded. Right now he's fireproof. He had the investigation shut down. I figured I might get him to boast about it, on the tape. I might have gotten something I could use, to make them take me back.
Why wasn't Criselli armed in the city?
Part of the deal. They all can do what they want in every other way, but the homicide figure has to come down. Give and take. Everyone's a winner.
Does Criselli know you're suspended?
Of course he does. He made them do it.
So, in fact, the goon in the same room as me knows it too, right? Is that what we're saying here? He knows you're not about to pull a badge or a gun. He knows you're just a member of the public, legally, that is, in terms of your powers of arrest and so on, and less than that, in terms of your credibility, as a witness against Criselli's people, I mean.
I told you to go see your brother.
Don't get all offensive. I'm not blaming you. I need to make a new plan, that's all. I need to understand the parameters.
Chrissy said, you shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place.
Why not?
At Sarah Lawrence, we would say it was uncomfortably gender-normative behavior. It was patriarchal. It spoke to the paternalistic shape of our society.
You know what they would say in the Marine Corps?
What?
They would point out that you asked me to stick close by because you think the Bowery is dangerous.
It is dangerous. 12 guys are about to show up and kick your butt.
Reacher nodded. We should go, probably.
You can't, Hemingway said. The goon won't let you. Not until the others get here.
Is he armed?
No, like I said.
You sure?
100%.
Do we agree one opponent is better than 12?
What are you talking about?
Wait here, Reacher said.
Reacher walked across the dim room as graceful as a bulked-up greyhound, with all the dumb confidence a guy gets from being 6'5 and 220 and 16 years old. He moved on through the bar, towards the restroom corridor. He had been in relatively few bars in his life, but enough to know they were superbly weapons-rich environments. Some had pool cues, all neatly lined up in racks, and some had martini glasses, all delicate and breakable, with stems like stilettos, and some had champagne bottles, as heavy as clubs. But the CBGB bar had no pool table, and its customers were apparently indifferent to martinis and champagne. The most numerous local resource was long-neck beer bottles, of which there were plenty. Reacher collected one as he walked, and in the corner of his eye he saw Criselli's guy get up and follow him, no doubt worried about rear exits or bathroom windows. There was, in fact, a rear exit at the end of the restroom corridor, but Reacher ignored it. Instead, he stepped into the men's room, which was perhaps the single most bizarre place he had ever seen outside of a military installation. The walls were bare brick, covered in dense graffiti, and there were three wall-hung urinals and a lone sit-down toilet, all exposed, up on a step like a throne. There was a two-hole metal sink and unspooled toilet rolls everywhere. No windows. Reacher filled his empty beer bottle with water from the faucet, for extra weight, and wiped his palm on his T-shirt, which neither dried his hand nor made his shirt appreciably wetter. But he got a decent grip on the long glass neck, and he held the bottle low down by his leg, and he waited. Criselli's guy came in seconds later. He glanced around, first amazed by the decor, then reassured by the lack of windows, which told Reacher all he really needed to know. But at 16, he still played it by the book, so he asked anyway. He said,
"Do we have a problem, you and me?"
The guy said,
"We're waiting for Mr. Crosselli. He'll be here in a minute. This won't be a problem for me, but it will be for you."
So Reacher swung the bottle, the water kept in by centrifugal force, and it caught the guy high on the cheekbone and rocked him back, whereupon Reacher whipped the bottle down again and smashed it on the lip of a urinal, glass and water flying everywhere, and he jabbed the jagged broken circle into the guy's thigh to bring his hands down, and then again into his face, with a twist, flesh tearing and blood flowing, and then he dropped the bottle and shoved the guy in the chest to bounce him off the wall, and as he came back towards him, he dropped a solid headbutt straight to the guy's nose, which was game over, right there, helped a little by the way the guy's head bounced off the urinal on his way to the floor, which all made a conclusive little head injury trifecta, bone, porcelain, tile. Good night and good luck. Reacher breathed in and breathed out, and then he checked the view in the busted mirror above the sink. He had diluted smears of the guy's blood on his forehead. He rinsed them off with lukewarm water and shook like a dog, and headed back through the bar into the main room. Jill Hemingway and Chrissy were on their feet in the middle of the dance floor. He nodded them towards the exit. They set off towards him, and he waited to fall into step. Hemingway said,
"Where's the goon?"
Reacher said,
He had an accident."
"Jesus."
They hustled on, into the lobby corridor, fast and hot. Too late. They got within 10 feet of the street door, and then it opened wide, and 4 big guys in sweated-through suits stepped in, followed by Crosselli himself. All 5 of them stopped, and Reacher stopped, and behind him Chrissy and Jill Hemingway stopped. 8 people, all in a strung-out single-file standoff, in a hot, narrow corridor, with perspiration running down the bare brick walls. From the far end of the line, Crosselli said,
"We meet again, kid."
Then, the lights went out. Reacher couldn't tell if his eyes were open or closed. The darkness was total and profound, like the next stop after nothing. And the darkness was completely silent, way down at some deep primeval level. All the low, subliminal hum of modern life suddenly gone, leaving nothing in its place except blind human shufflings, and a kind of whispered, eerie keening that seemed to come up from ageless rocks below, from the 20th century to the Stone Age, at the flick of a switch. From behind him, Reacher heard Chrissy's voice say,
"Reacher?"
"Stand still," he said.
"Okay."
"Now turn around."
"Okay."
He heard her feet on the floor, shuffling. He searched his last retained visual memory for where the first of Crosselli's guys had stopped.
"The middle of the corridor, facing dead ahead, maybe 5 feet away."
He planted his left foot and kicked out with his right, hard, blindly, aiming groin high into the pitch-black emptiness ahead. But he hit something lower, making contact a jarring split second before he expected, a kneecap maybe, which was fine. Either way, the first of Crosselli's guys was about to fall down, and the other 3 were about to trip over him. Reacher spun around and felt for Chrissy's back, and he put his right arm around her shoulders, and with his left hand he found Hemingway, and he half-pulled and half-pushed them back the way they had come, through to the bar, where a feeble, battery-powered safety light had clicked on, which meant it hadn't been the flick of a switch. The whole building had lost power. He found the restroom corridor, and pushed Chrissy ahead of him, and pulled Hemingway behind him to the rear door, and they barged through it, out to the street, which was way too dark. They hustled onward anyway, fast, out in the heat again, muscle memory and instinct compelling them to put some distance between the door and themselves, compelling them to seek the shadows. But it was all shadows. The Bowery was a pitch-dark and sullen ditch, long and straight both ways, bordered by pitch-dark and sullen buildings, uniformly massive and gloomy, their unlit bulk for once darker than the night sky. The skyline sentinels 40 blocks north and south weren't there at all,
except in a negative sense, because at the bottom of the sky there were dead fingers where inert buildings were blocking the glow of starlight behind thin cloud.
"The whole city is out,"
Hemingway said.
"Listen,"
Reacher said.
"To what?"
"Exactly. The sound of a billion electric motors not running, and a billion electric circuits switched off."
Chrissy said,
"This is unbelievable."
Hemingway said,
"There's going to be trouble. Give it an hour or so, and there's going to be rioting and arson, and a whole lot of looting. So you two, right now, head north as far and as fast as you can. Do not go east or west. Do not use the tunnels. Do not stop until you're north of 14th Street."
Reacher said,
"What are you going to do?"
"I'm going to work."
"You're suspended."
"I can't stand by and do nothing. And you have to get your friend back where you found her. I think those are our basic obligations."
And then she ran south towards Houston Street and was lost in the dark within seconds. The street light on Great Jones was no longer working, but the blue Chevette was still under it, gray and formless in the dark, as yet unmolested. Chrissy opened it up and they got in, and she started the motor and put it in gear. She didn't turn on the lights, which Reacher understood. Disturbing the massive darkness didn't seem right, or possible even. The great city felt stunned and passive, an immense organism laid low, implacable and indifferent to tiny, scurrying humans, of which there was a growing number within view. Windows were opening, and folks on lower floors were walking downstairs and coming out, standing near their doors and peering about, full of wonder and apprehension. The heat was still way up there. It wasn't cooling down at all. 100 degrees, maybe more, clamping down, and now smug and settled and supreme, unchallenged by fans or air conditioning or any other kind of man-made mediation. Great Jones Street was one way west, and they crossed Lafayette and Broadway and continued on West 3rd, Chrissy driving slow and tentative, not much faster than walking pace, a dark car in the dark, one of very few about. Maybe drivers had felt compelled to pull over as part of the general paralysis. The traffic lights were all out. Each new block was newly weird, still and silent, blank and gray, absolutely unlit. They turned north on LaGuardia Place and went counterclockwise around the bottom right-hand corner of Washington Square back to the coffee shop. Chrissy parked where she had before, and they got out into the soupy air and the silence. The coffee shop was dark, obviously, with nothing to see behind its dusty glass window. The air conditioner above the door was silent, and the door was locked. Reacher and Chrissy cupped their hands and pressed them to the glass and peered through, and saw nothing except vague black shapes in the dark. No staff, no customers. Maybe a health board thing. If the refrigerators went out, maybe they had to abandon ship. Reacher said,
"Where will your friends have gone?"
Chrissy said.
No idea.
You said there was a plan.
If one of us gets lucky, we meet back here at midnight.
I'm sorry you didn't get luckier.
I feel okay now.
We're still south of 14th Street.
They won't find you in the dark, surely.
Will we find your friends in the dark?
Why would we want to? They'll get back by midnight. Until then, we should hang out and experience this. Don't you think? This is pretty amazing.
And it was. There was a hugeness to it. Not just a room, or a building, or a block, but the entire city, slumped, inert, and defeated all around them. As if it was ruined, as if it was dead, like a relic from the past. And maybe it was more than just the city. There was no glow on any horizon. Nothing from across either river, nothing from the south, nothing from the north. Maybe the whole northeast was out. Maybe all of America. Or the whole world. People were always talking about secret weapons. Maybe someone had pulled a trigger. Chrissy said,
Let's go look at the Empire State Building. We may never see it like this again.
Reacher said,
Okay.
In the car.
Okay.
They went up University and used 9th Street across to 6th Avenue where they turned north. 6th Avenue was nothing at all, just a long black hole, and then a small rectangle of night sky where it ended at Central Park. There were a few cars on it. All were moving slow. Most had their lights off, like the Chevette. Instinctive somehow. A shared assumption. Crowd behavior. Reacher caught a sudden whiff of fear.
Hide in the dark. Don't stand out. Don't be seen.
Herald Square had people in it, where Broadway cut across at 34th Street. Most of them were out in the middle of the triangle, away from the buildings, trying to see the sky. Some of them were formed up in moving bunches, like sports fans leaving the stadium after a win, with the same kind of boisterous energy. But Macy's windows were all intact, so far. They kept going all the way to West 38th, crawling past the dead traffic lights and the cross streets, unsure every time whether they should yield or keep on going. But it turned out there was no real danger of either fender benders or confrontation, because everyone was moving slow and acting deferential. All after you. No, after you. Clearly the spirit so far was cooperation, on the roads at least. Reacher wondered how long it would last. They went east on 38th and turned on 5th, 4 blocks north of the Empire State. Nothing to see, just a broad, dark base, like both sides of every other block. And then nothing above, just spectral darkness. They parked on the 5th Avenue curb, on the block north of 34th Street, and got out for a closer look. 34th was a double-wide street, with a clear view east and west, dark all the way, except for an orange glow in the far distance above what must have been Brooklyn. Fires were burning there.
It's starting,
Reacher said. They heard a cop car coming north on Madison, and they saw it cross the 6-lane width of 34th Street 1 block over. Its lights looked amazingly bright. It drove on out of sight, and the night went quiet again. Chrissy said,
Why did the power go out?
Don't know, Reacher said. Overload from all the AC, or a lightning strike somewhere, or the electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear explosion, or maybe someone didn't pay the bill.
Nuclear explosion?
It's a known side effect, but I don't think it happened. We'd have seen the flash, and depending where it was, we'd have been burned to a crisp.
What kind of military are you?
No kind at all. My dad's a Marine, and my brother's going to be an Army officer, but that's them, not me.
What are you going to be?
I have no idea. Probably not a lawyer.
Do you think your FBI friend was right about riots and looting?
Maybe not so much in Manhattan.
Are we going to be okay?
Reacher said,
We're going to be fine. If all else fails, we'll do what they did in the olden days. We'll wait for morning.
They turned onto 34th Street and drove over as close as they could get to the East River. They stopped on a trash-strewn triangle half under the FDR Drive, and they stared through the windshield over the water to the dark lands beyond. Queens, dead ahead. Brooklyn, to the right. The Bronx, way far to the left. The fires in Brooklyn looked pretty big already. There were fires in Queens, too, and the Bronx, but Reacher had been told there were always fires in the Bronx. Nothing behind them in Manhattan. Not yet. But there were plenty of sirens. The darkness was getting angry, maybe because of the heat. Reacher wondered how Macy's windows were doing. Chrissy kept the engine running for the AC. The gas was about half full. The tails of her shirt hit her shorts completely. She looked like she was wearing nothing else, just the shirt, which looked great. She was very pretty. He asked,
"How old are you?"
She said,
19.
"Where are you from?"
"California."
"You, like it here?"
"So far, we get seasons. Heat and cold.
Especially heat."
She asked,
"How old are you?"
"I'm legal," he said. "That's really all you need to know."
"Is it?"
"I hope so."
She smiled and turned off the engine. She locked her door and leaned over to lock his. She smelled of hot, clean girl. She said,
"It's gonna get warm in here."
"I hope so,"
he said again. He put his arm around her shoulders and pulled her close and kissed her. He knew how to do it. He had more than 3 years of practice. He put his free hand on the curve of her hip. She was a great kisser. Warm, wet, plenty of tongue. Closed eyes. He pushed her shirt up a little and ducked his hand under it. She was lean and firm, hot and a little damp. She brought her spare hand over and put it under his shirt. She smoothed it up over his side, over his chest, and down to his waist. She put the tips of her fingers under his waistband, which he took to be an encouraging sign. They came up for air, and then they started again. He moved his free hand to her knee, and slid it up the wondrous, smooth skin of her thigh, on the outside, with his thumb on the inside, to the hem of her shorts, and back again, to the other knee, and up her other leg, just as smooth and luscious, his fingers on the inside this time, his thumb on the outside, all the time trying to imagine anything more splendid than the feel of a warm girl's skin, and failing. And this time he went a little further, until his leading finger was jammed against the hard seam between her legs, at the bottom of her zip. She clamped hard on his hand, which at first he took as an admonition, but then he realized she had another purpose in mind, so he kept his hand there, pushing hard, as she ground away, almost lifting her off the seat. Then she sighed and gasped and went all rubbery, and they came up for air again. And he moved his crushed hand to the buttons on her shirt, and he tried to make his fingers work, which they did reasonably well. One button, two, three, all the way down, until his shirt fell open. They kissed again, the third marathon, and his free hand went to work in a different area, first outside a silky bra, and then inside, from below, until it was all pushed up, and her small, damp breasts were his. He moved his mouth to her neck, and then to her nipples, and he put his hand back where it had been before, and she started grinding again, long and slow, long and slow, breathing hard, until for a second time she sighed and gasped and fell against him as if she had no bones in her body. Then she put a hand on his chest and pushed him away, back towards his window, which again he took as a reproach, until she smiled like she knew something he didn't, and unbuttoned his pants. Slim, brown fingers took care of his zip, at which exact point, for the first time in his life, he truly understood the phrase, died and gone to heaven. Her head went down into his lap, and he felt cool lips and a tongue, and he closed his eyes. And then he opened them again and stared about, determined to remember every last detail of his situation, the where and the when, and the how, and the who, and the why, especially the why. Because his conscious mind could find no logical path between the Port Authority bus terminal and what had to be some kind of enchanted kingdom. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town. That was for damn sure. So he stared around, locking it all in. The river, the formless burrows beyond, the distant fires, the wire fences, the bleak concrete pillars holding up the road above. He saw a man, standing 30 yards away in the dark, silhouetted against the glow coming off the water. Mid-20s, maybe, judging by his posture, medium height, thick in the upper body, a geeky shape to his head because of uncooperative hair. He had the kind of hair that should have been cut much shorter, but it was 1977. He was holding something in his right hand. Chrissy was still busy. She was unquestionably the best ever. No comparison. None at all. He wondered if Sarah Lawrence was co-ed. He could go there, just as good as NYU. Not that they were likely to get married or anything, but maybe she had friends, or a sister. In fact, he knew she had friends, the two blondes. They'll wait. That's part of the deal. They had 2 hours until midnight, which suddenly seemed like nothing at all. The guy moved in the dark. He rolled around a pillar, light on his feet, staying covered, checking the blind spot at 90 degrees, checking the other direction, and then moving forward, fast and straight, to the next pillar, towards the Chevette. The guy eased around the new pillar, just to check his new blind spot, and then he pulled back and merged with the concrete, barely visible again, all the time being very careful with the thing in his hand, as if it was valuable or especially fragile. Chrissy was still busy, and she was doing a fine, fine job. Died and gone to heaven wasn't even close. It was an underestimate of the most serious kind, egregious even. It was the kind of faint praise that could cause a diplomatic incident. The guy moved again. He went through the same routine, reflexively, glance, glance, move, to the next pillar, closer still to the Chevette, and he blended in, bringing his right arm to rest last, solicitous of the thing he was holding, taking care not to bring it into contact with the concrete, thereby bringing it separately through the river's glow all by itself. Reacher knew what it was. It was an upside-down revolver, swinging by the trigger guard on the guy's right-hand index finger, a squat shape, thick in the upper body like the guy himself, rounded in the grips, a 2.5-inch barrel, smooth, with few projections. Could have been a Charter Arms Bulldog, a 5-shooter, sturdy, most often chambered for the .44 Special. Double action, easy to service, not a target shooter's gun, but good close up. Chrissy was still busy. The guy moved again, closer still to the Chevette. He stared right at it. Before he had gotten on the bus in Pohang, Reacher's mother had made him read her newspapers. New York City, a killing spree, the son of Sam. Named from his crazy letters, But before the letters came, he had been called something else. He had been called the 44 caliber killer, because he used 44 caliber bullets from a revolver. Specifically, the NYPD said, from a Charter Arms bulldog. Chrissy was still busy, and this was no kind of a time to stop, no kind of a time at all. In fact, stopping was not a possibility. Physically, mentally, any other way, it was absolutely not on the agenda. It was in a whole different hemisphere from the agenda, maybe a whole different universe. It was a biological fact. It was not going to happen. The guy stared. Reacher stared back. He's killing people. Couples sitting in cars. Way to go, Reacher thought. Do it now. I'll go out on a high note. The highest possible note in the whole history of high notes. Jack Reacher, R.I.P. He died young, but he had a smile on his face. The guy made no move. He just stared. Reacher stared back. The guy made no move. Couples sitting in cars. But they weren't. Not from an exterior perspective. Chrissy's head was in his lap. Reacher was alone in the car. Just a driver, off the road, in the emergency, waiting in the passenger seat for the extra legroom. The guy stared. Reacher stared back. Chrissy was still busy. The guy moved on. To the next pillar. And the next. And then he was lost to sight. And then Chrissy's work was done. Afterwards, they repaired the damage as well as they could, straightening and zipping and buttoning and combing. Chrissy said,
"Better than Blondie?"
Reacher said,
"How could I tell? Better than Blondie live on stage at CBGB, I mean. Oh, a lot better. No real comparison. You like Blondie, right? Best ever. Well, top 5 or 10. Shut up."
She started the engine again and put the air on max. She slid down in her seat and lifted her shirt tails so the vents blew straight up against her skin. Reacher said,
"I saw someone." "When?" "Just now."
"Doing what?"
"Peering into this car."
"Who?"
"Some guy."
"For real? That's kind of creepy."
Reacher said, "I know, and I'm real sorry, but I have to go find Jill Hemingway. I should tell her first. She needs some favors."
"Tell her what?"
"What I saw."
"What did you see?"
"Something she should know about."
"Was it one of Criselli's guys?"
"No."
"So how is it important?"
"She might be able to use it."
"Where is she?"
"I have no idea. Let me out in Washington Square, and I'll walk. I bet she's north of Houston."
"You would be going right back in there, where we got chased out before."
"Let's call that phase our reconnaissance."
"What would you do this time?"
"Fastest way to find Hemingway is to look for Criselli."
"I'm not going to let you."
How could you stop me?"
"I would tell you not to. I'm your girlfriend, at least until midnight."
"Is this what they teach you at Sarah Lawrence?"
"Pretty much."
"Works for me," Reacher said. "We'll just hang out, see if she comes by."
"Really?"
"I mean it." Why?
Laws of physics. A random encounter doesn't get more likely just because both parties are moving.
Okay, where?
Let's say the corner of Bleecker and Broadway. That might make the encounter less random.
That's way down there.
It's a block from Houston. We can break out south if we need to.
We?
Was it you who wanted me to stick close by?
This is a whole different type of crazy.
Reacher nodded. I understand, he said. I really do. It's your choice. You can let me out in Washington Square. That would be fine. Don't think I'll ever forget you.
Really?
If I'm done before midnight, I'll come say goodbye.
I mean, really, you won't forget me? That's very sweet.
Also very true. As long as I live.
Chrissy said,
Tell me more about the guy you saw.
Reacher said,
I think it was the son of Sam.
What? You are crazy.
I'm serious.
And you just sat there?
Seemed like the best thing to do.
How close did he get?
About 20 feet. He had a good look, and he walked away.
The son of Sam was 20 feet from me?
He didn't see you. I think that's why he walked away.
She glanced all around in the dark and put the car in gear. She said,
The son of Sam is an NYPD case, not the FBI.
Reacher said,
Whoever passes on a tip gets a brownie point. I imagine that's how it works.
What's the tip?
The way he moved.
There were more sirens behind them. First Avenue, Second Avenue, uptown, downtown, crosstown. There were plenty of cops on the streets. The mood was changing. Reacher could taste it on the air.
I'll come with you,
Chrissy said,
for the experience. These are the big things we'll always remember.
They used 34th Street again, back towards the center of the island, back towards the heart of darkness. The city was still pitch black, still dead like a giant creature fallen on its back. There were broken windows. There were people roaming in groups carrying stuff. There were police cars and fire trucks speeding through the streets, all lit up and whooping and barking. But their lights didn't make much impression on the blackness, and their sirens didn't seem to worry the roaming people. They merely scuttled into doorways as the cars and trucks passed. The people reminded Reacher of tiny nighttime organisms working on a corpse, penetrating its skin, exploring it, disassembling it, feeding off it, recovering its nutrients, recycling its components, like a dead whale feeds a million sea creatures on the ocean bed. They turned south on Fifth Avenue at the Empire State Building and drove slowly in the middle lane, passing knots of people in the roadway, two of which were carrying a rolled-up carpet, three of which were loading the trunk of a big battered car with something in boxes. They veered left onto Broadway at 23rd Street, past the ghostly Flatiron Building, and they continued south, around Union Square, across 14th Street, into enemy territory, and onward. The mayhem got a little worse the further south they went. Broadway looked narrow, like a dark trench through a dark landscape, and there were busted windows and people everywhere, moving in groups, fast and furtive and silent, barely visible at all, except for the glow of cigarettes. They passed 4th Street and 3rd, where they had been before, and Chrissy started to slow the car, and Reacher said,
Change of plan. I think 6th Avenue and Bleecker might be better.
Chrissy said,
Why?
What is Griselli worried about right now?
Getting his stuff ripped off, like anyone, if he has stuff.
I think he does. I mean, how does he earn money between Houston and 14th? Maybe protection rackets and hookers and so on, but dope, for sure. He must have a stash somewhere. But where? Not an ancestral home in Little Italy, because that's way south of Houston.
You know the geography pretty well. I've studied it from afar.
And he walked west from Waverly, after the slapping incident, towards 6th Avenue. Obviously he was heading back to make his phone calls, about me. So his HQ must be west of Waverly.
You think Hemingway knows where it is?
I'm sure she does, and I'm sure she's watching it right now. I'm assuming no one gave her an actual role tonight, because she's suspended, so she's still freelancing.
I bet she's hoping some bunch of guys bust down Cresselli's door so she can get a record of what's inside. Maybe she'll even get Cresselli defending it, which would be pretty much a slam dunk, wouldn't it? Doesn't matter what kind of deal he made. Some things can't be ignored.
It'll be more than just Cresselli defending it. He's got 12 guys.
10 now, Reacher said. 2 of them are in hospital, or trying to get there. But we'll keep out of their way. It's Hemingway we want.
Hard to find one woman in the dark.
All we can do is try.
So they rolled onward, towards Houston Street, past a big stereo store with 2 busted windows and not much left inside. And they made the right and crept west, past the dark wasteland streets of Soho coming in from the left, Mercer and Green and Worcester and West Broadway and Thompson and Sullivan and McDougal. Then they turned right on 6th and headed north a block to where Bleecker and Downing and Minetta all met in an untidy little 6-way split. Retail was down market and scruffy in that location, some of it too scruffy even for looters, some of it already busted wide open and stripped. Looking north, 6th was the same long black hole it had been before, with the same slim upright rectangle of night sky at the end of it.
Chrissy said, "Should I park here?"
Reacher said, "Let's cruise a few blocks."
"You said we would hang out and let her come to us."
"Mission creep. Occupational hazard. Like the Navy transporting the Marines."
I'm an English major.
Just 5 minutes, okay?"
"Okay,"
she said.
But they didn't need 5 minutes. They were done in barely 60 seconds. They made the tight left onto Downing, and a right on Bedford, and a right on Carmine, back towards Bleecker again. And in a doorway on the right side of the street, Reacher caught a flash of pale skin and blonde hair, and he pointed, and Chrissy jammed to a stop, and Jill Hemingway stepped out of the dark and bent down to Reacher's window, like a sole streetwalker talking to an enlisted man. Reacher expected Hemingway to be mad at his reappearance, but she wasn't. He figured she felt exposed, or caught out in her own obsession, which she was, basically, and she looked a little sheepish about it. He asked,
"Is this place near here?"
She pointed through the car at a pair of large blank doors across the street. They were tall and wide, like a wagon entrance from long ago, big enough for a cart and a team of horses. In the daylight, the paint might have looked dark green. Set into the right-hand door was a Judas gate, big enough for a person. Presumably, the doors would lead to an interior ground-floor yard. It was a 2-story building. Offices above, possibly, or storerooms. Behind the building was a bigger building, blank and dark and massive. A brick church of some kind, maybe. Reacher asked,
"Is he in there?"
Hemingway nodded. Reacher asked,
"With how many others?"
"He's alone."
"Really?"
"He runs protection rackets, among other things, so now he has to deliver. His guys are all out, watching over his clients."
"I didn't know protection rackets worked that way. I thought they were just extortion, plain and simple."
"They are, basically, but he needs to maintain some kind of credibility, and he needs to keep his best cash cows in business. There's a lot of damage being done tonight. Plenty of places are going to go under. No more payoffs from them. And a wise man keeps an eye on his cash flow."
Reacher turned and looked at the doors.
"You hoping someone will break in?"
"I don't know what's taking them so long. That's the problem with junkies. No get up and go."
"What has he got in there?"
"A little of everything. He keeps his inventory low because he's got the New Jersey Turnpike and the Holland Tunnel for rapid resupply, which is apparently what they teach you in business school now. But still, I bet there's a week's worth in there."
"Are we in the way? Should we go park somewhere else?"
"You should go home. This isn't your business."
"I need to talk to you."
"About what?"
"The Son of Sam."
"Cresselli isn't enough for you?"
"I saw him."
"Who?"
"I saw a man carrying a Charter Arms bulldog and peering into